This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community. Get your motor
running. Fender Bender on Joy 94.9, revving up the weekends with news and views on all things motoring.
Yes, welcome once again to another edition of Fender Bender on Joy 94.9. This is Joy's very own motoring program. My name is Tim Nicholson. I am super excited to have your company on this glorious Saturday afternoon in Melbourne, wherever you are in Australia or around the world. We hope you are listening and you are having a fabulous afternoon. We've got heaps coming up. Massive thanks, as always, to Luke and the gang for Critical Hit. They'll be back next week, so make sure you are tuning in at the same time. But we are now switching to motoring gears, which is manual or automatic, whatever you want to do, guys. But we've got heaps coming up. We're going to be speaking to the lovely James Cockington, the author of Turning Japanese, 50 Years of Japanese Motoring in Australia, which is a really interesting book about exactly what I just said. So we're going to be looking at that. And we also today, ladies and gentlemen, kick off the Fender Bender Raddest Car of the Year Awards season. It's a very brief season. It's only 2 weeks, but we are going to be looking at our favourites from the last 12 months, and I have some incredible Australian talent right here with me in the studio.
Huge intro.
I'm just looking in a mirror. No, I have the lovely Byron Matthew Darkus. Hello, Byron.
Hello, it's Maureen Glory here.
Maureen Glory is here with us, and Matty Brogan. Hello, Matt.
Hello. Struggling to think of a drag name. Sorry, Timmy.
We will come up with one at some point.
But while we're talking about drag names, I just want to say hello to our newest drag member out there who's listening. Nicole Slaw-Kidman.
I love that.
Nicole Slaw-Kidman, hello there.
That is up there with Venetia Blind, which I also really like. I do have to address one thing, though, and that is, Byron, there's a growth in the room.
I'm sorry. 2 to 3 weeks, it'll be gone, I promise.
Really? So we have a handlebar mustache.
Mustache?
I'm making up words. Moustache.
Moustache.
Is this in order of a charity?
No. Sorry, charity. Look, support. Please support men's prostate checks and cancer, whatever it is that, whatever it is that Movember supports. Yes. It's a great cause.
We love prostates.
Absolutely. But no, this goes beyond Movember. I was on holidays fairly recently and I thought I'd grow one, and I noticed that my beautiful husband does not mind, and nor a lot of people. So, yeah.
There you go. Look, folks,
anything that covers my face is probably a good thing.
Now that's not true. So you've got that, Matty. And you've got a bit of scruff as well.
Oh, I've always got a bit of scruff.
Yes.
It's laziness, Timmy.
That's all it is. That's how my beard happened years ago. I went on holidays. I literally couldn't be bothered shaving, and here we are. Anyway, we're not a facial hair show. We could be, and I would be happy with that. But we are here to talk about cars, ladies and gentlemen. We've got a big show coming up. Later on, we are going to talk about our favourite cars for the year. Every year, of course, since we've been on air, I think it's 4 years now, Fender Bender has had the Fender Bender Raddest Car of the Year's Award, which is arguably the most exclusive car award in the country, let's be honest.
VIP only.
We've had some fabulous past winners. Ford Focus was the first winner, but we didn't really harness the word raddest there. It was a great car. Was it raddest? Well, then we had Toyota 86 and Subaru BRZ, Ford Fiesta ST, and then last year was the BMW i8. So these are rad cars. You know, they're a bit out there, it's not just like a what's the best car, it's what's rad.
Yeah, we're not talking wallflowers, automotive wallflowers here, so I'm afraid the Ford Focus probably won't win this year.
A good car, but
it is a very good car, yes.
In saying that. So anyway, lots coming up, but we're going to get right into some news straight away. Really quickly, guys, Volkswagen have found a fix, so everything's fine now with Volkswagen.
Yay! Everyone can run out there and buy their Ups and Polos. Well, you can't buy an Up, unfortunately, but you can buy your Polos and your Passats and your Golfs, knowing that, you know, no defeat devices have been fitted to these cars.
Well, yeah, because if I have to see Dieselgate written somewhere once more, seriously, can we please stop putting gate after stuff?
I agree. You know what? I resisted it at my work for some time and then it just started. You can't avoid it, and it's a bit of a shame. Yeah. Speaking of, I did read something this morning about the 1 litre engine from the Up going in the Golf. And somebody reviewed it overseas, and apparently it's fabulous.
Oh, my
goodness.
It was
great in the Up.
Well, I just drove an Audi A1 with that engine plus a turbo, and it is fabulon. Seriously, it just takes all creases out, just like, you know, like a fabulon would. It is Amazeballs. It totally. I can imagine that that engine in that car would just turn a, well, you know, the 2013 Wheels Car of the Year winner into something amazing. So even more amazing.
Yeah,
so
yeah. There you go.
But Tim, what is this fix?
I'm absolutely not sure. I'm not going to lie to you. We were Maddie and I were talking about this earlier. It's like, do we know much about this? We've been busy.
Well, look, that's because I haven't really gone into much detail.
No.
So, you know, it's not that Tim hasn't done his homework, or nor has Maddie, or nor have I, but it's just they had a deadline to meet as to what the basic fix will be, and they basically said one engine will need software updates and one will need a hardware fix. So I believe the 2-litre TDI, which is the majority of engines in Australia, will require a physical part to be fitted to that car.
Yeah, which I think straightens the airflow into... Cool.
Sorry, no, the other way around. Sorry, the 1.6. So they sold about 1.6 cars with the 1.6 engine in Australia. So if you drive a Polo TDI or a Golf 6 TDI, the 1.6, not the 2-litre, that will need a physical, like an air filtery thing fitted to it. It's not an air filter at all, but it looks like an air filter. Yeah. Well, it does when I glanced away from that normal website.
It sort of looked like a cheese grater a little bit, didn't it?
Like a fancy. But the 2-litre only needs a software update, is my understanding.
That's right.
So
it just needs a zap.
Yeah.
Zap.
And it's great because they're all going, oh, yeah, you know, this is fabulous. We've got this fix now, but it's not going to, you know, I mean, people are still going to be annoyed. And there's questions over whether people would buy this car secondhand or third hand or whatever it is. So, you know, it's not the all-encompassing fix, of course, but at least it's a step.
Yeah. And not to mention the slight loss of face.
Yeah. Well, just a tiny.
That's right. So Volkswagen is still in a Das Hundehaus, the doghouse. So you're not getting out that easily, I'm sure. But we also should appreciate the fact that the company is working extremely hard to rectify a massive fail. Yeah. So,
I think so too. Moving right along, we do speak about that stuff a lot, and I don't know, people are probably over it now, let's be honest. Yeah. Moving on to something slightly more sexy, well, I think it's sexy, I don't know if you guys do. Last week, Guangzhou Motor Show, I think that's how you pronounce it.
What motor show was that, Tim?
Guangzhou?
The Guangzhou Motor Show?
In China, let's call it that. interesting, usually, you know, like domestic market, Chinese kind of stuff, but BMW showed a compact sedan concept, which kind of points to a possible 1 Series sedan. I think it's a real looker. I've been a bit disappointed with BMW design of late, and I think it's a bit sexy on the bottom, and I am a bottom man.
Look, let's look at, you know, CLA and A3 sedan. Like,
well, the A3's all right.
Oh, I like
it. No, I love them. Yeah. Like, don't get me wrong. Right. Yeah. And they seem to be quite popular. There's quite a few on the road. So, look, cash in.
Go for gold.
You know what? It's based, as you know, on the UK L1 platform, which underpins the Mini and the BMW 2 Series Active Tourer, as well as a new X1. However, I think what they've done really cleverly is that they've taken the old 1 Series coupe shape and kind of funked it up with a couple of doors and a little bubble butt in the back to make it...
And we love that.
Yeah, we all love that. Just to make it, like, just give it that kind of, you know, that kind of nice buns look.
Yeah.
And I think it works.
It really works. And a colleague of mine pointed something out. You know, they never do much with that kidney grill, but it's actually kind of pointed out. If you look at it from a side shot, it kind of goes out like... boobs, you could say.
Was this your colleague Courtney Act that you were talking about? which colleague are we talking about?
Rhonda Hamilton.
Oh, Rhonda Hamilton. Yes. Hello, Rhonda.
She pointed it out.
Yeah, help me, Rhonda.
Help me, Rhonda, indeed. Yeah. So, look, it's a bit of a looker. You know, they keep saying it's just a concept, bloody blah, might be just for China. Surely we'll see this.
You know what? More importantly, folks, this may point to a front drive 1 Series replacement.
Yeah.
Encompassing the hatch
that was
well,
only a matter of time, right?
And the coupe. But which would be kind of heartbreaking if you like your, you know, your Soul C segment rear drive sports hatch. But then again, in this day and age, really, do people even know which end of the car is being driven? Whether they've been taken?
As long as it's got the right badge.
It's a bit that way, isn't it?
Look, clearly,
I think you're right.
Because I think most people prefer to be pulled than pushed. So that's what's going on there, I think.
I think that's true.
Yes.
I think you speak for everyone in this studio.
It's true.
Really briefly, staying on China, Geely, who own Volvo, Chinese car maker, haven't had really any luck here, and I don't think they're selling cars here anymore. They might have stopped. I think they were only available in Western Australia. Anyway, blah-de-blah. They are going full greenie. 90% hybrid, plug-in hybrid and EV lineup by 2020, which is a bold move.
Sorry, what was that percent again?
90.
XC90%.
XC90%, exactly. Wow. Right. And look, it's a funny thing because I've been thinking about this a lot recently, and there's a lot of,
she has no life.
It's true. I'm very dull. We all speak to people from car makers, and they always say the same thing about their hybrid lines in Australia, and, oh, there's no market for it here. People don't want to buy hybrids. If you just don't leave them any option, they might buy hybrids. Well, this is that build it and they will come kind of mentality. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Like, I think I feel like if you pushed hybrid onto an unsuspecting conservative Australia, I feel like they'd work it out and go, oh, yeah,
well,
it's fine.
Look, it seems to work in California, doesn't it? Yeah. And you know, even now that they've removed the tax incentive over there, everyone's still, it's right. The mindset.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And also, and then, in places like Australia, maybe the government will get on board with, maybe incentivizing, if they wanted to speaking of that tax incentive, if suddenly people look like adopting hybrid and EV and hydrogen and all that other sort of technology that leads to the reduction and eventual elimination of fossil fuel motoring.
Yeah.
So I think it's a good thing. And I think, Tim and Maddie, you're spot on. You're on spot. That totally.
I'm very spotty. Just also a couple of local things. Now, do we know of Motor World Sydney, ladies and gentlemen? It's like a car show. It's like an automotive extravaganza. It's not like the Australian International Motor Show. It's actually like one of those, what's that word? It's an experiential kind of show. So you can go, you can drive these cars. It was going to be held this month in Melbourne. That didn't happen. So they've, and the New South Wales government have actually poured a shed load of money into this thing. And so it's going to be held next November at Eastern Creek, or whatever it's called now. And you can go and drive cars and
it's
on a
weekend,
track and all
like
this.
It's like a
thing.
Weekend thing, isn't
it? Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So, didn't we have one fairly recently?
We did. That was the Australian Motoring Festival, which was run by the RACV and
VACC.
That's it. Yep. Exactly right. Yep. And that they will not be doing that again. That was unsuccessful.
It was unsuccessful.
What a shame.
It is a shame. Yeah. But this mob, I spoke to them a little while ago. They seem to think they've got a bit of a better business strategy of how to do it. Anyway, Honda are the first brand on board, so you can go and drive a CRV around a track if you like, or a Jazz, or there will be an NSX there. Will you be able to drive it? Probably not, but it will be there.
The world's longest gestating concept car.
It really is, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it was 2011 BC when we first laid eyes on that little beauty, but hey, true. Apparently it's worth it. Apparently it's awesome. Have you checked the mail?
I have not.
Yeah, well, we seem to have a letter from a very regular...
I see that is Dan Gardner,
hello,
a lovely colleague.
Hello there. I'm trying to remember her drag name. Well, hello there.
Extra Patty.
Extra Patty.
Extra Patty.
In her MX-5.
Driving along in an ND MX-5 with the roof open. The roof open.
Hey.
Singing along to Tina. Could I get any gay out? Love you people.
Oh, he's such a lovely.
I will not say the words that he
put
there. Well,
let's just hope he's driving around with his shirt off to match the topless.
Yep. Well, all I can say is that Melbourne is all the richer for having Extra Patty in her MX-5 showing her buns and everything else that she might have.
That's true. Tim Byron and Maddie Booey here hanging out for the day. What a beautiful afternoon, guys.
You know, absolutely.
Whether you're listening in Melbourne or Tasmania.
Yay! Hi, Brian.
Or wherever you are, or swanning around Melbourne in an MX-5, we hope you're having a fabulous day. Now, ladies and gentlemen, some more news this week. In fact, today I saw this. So BMW in the United Kingdom have launched an online purchasing system for all of its cars. Now, apparently, all of their dealers, the entire dealer network in the UK, which is like 137 dealers or whatever, are on board with this. They're happy about it. They're supporting it. And apparently you can buy a car in 10 minutes online. There you go. There's your 7 Series.
Wow. You're kidding.
No.
Absolutely. Does it give you any benefits? Like, can you jump queues if you wanted to buy, I don't know, that magnificent X6 that you've always wanted? Like,
well,
something
I
like
don't
that?
Think you would get further ahead, sadly, no.
Oh,
I said a little bit of a dig at an X6 there,
no.
Byron.
How dare you?
How dare you?
Outrageous.
But it's quite interesting. You can, 10 minutes it takes. There's a configurator, so it's a bit more of an advanced version of what you get in the dealers. and you've got, you know, access to somebody immediately as you're doing it that's on the 24 hours a day. If you go, oh, I've done something, those geniuses. So like a messenger service straight away, like, oh, I've stuffed something up. I ordered the pink leather, not the mauve, for example.
So Marguerite from Hamburg is probably on the other line just waiting to take your order.
She is. I know a Marguerite. She's not from Hamburg. She is from Canterbury. But
hello, Marguerite from Hamburg.
And it's also tied in with glasses who do the valuations and that kind of thing. So it's quite interesting that a company as big as BMW are doing this, and this is a test market thing.
Yeah,
as well.
Look, I can see both sides of this. Like, yeah, sure, it's easier, and you know, it is hard to get to dealerships if you're busy people.
Yeah.
But it's also taking away from that, you know, sitting and feeling and smelling and touching and, and all that, you know, the good stuff about when you buy a car.
Yeah.
Like, it's an exciting experience going and buying a car.
Totally.
It's like you know, it's like the way that these apps that make you meet people online has taken away that experience as well.
The touching, the feeling, and smelling.
Yeah, no, seriously, absolutely. You know, I lament being someone of Generation X vintage that used to go out the bars. And,
vintage.
Fine vintage, thank you, that's me. You know, I kind of think, well, there's probably something lost there. And is that what you mean? I think that's what you mean.
Yeah, I do. And look, but it also speaks of, I think people, a car's a commodity now. It's just something to get you around. They've lost that love of the car. You're not so passionate about your car. You're not even so passionate about driving anymore.
Yeah.
And I think that's reflected, you know, this is a totally different subject, but the amount of young people not getting their license. And it just speaks of, yeah, all right, look, fine, I want that badge, and that's the car that's going to get me from A to B, and that's as far as I care about it, and isn't it a nice colour?
But isn't it funny that people like us, obviously, this is our job, we're really interested in cars, the idea of purchasing a car without driving it, without, as you say, kind of feeling
it.
Freaks me out. I couldn't, like, I can't even do that with, I'm still a bit old school with clothes and that kind of thing. My partner and I are looking to buy a couch. You can go and do that online. You don't know if it's, you know, you can fit two of you on it, spooning, and that, you know, you need to test these things out in the darn showroom.
Absolutely.
Yeah, all
absolutely.
Of this kind of thing. But it's interesting because this week I...
she's wearing a corset, by the way, so she's very old-fashioned in the way buying her clothes.
It's very true. I was chatting to the, I think his name is Paul Harris, the Asia-Pacific manager or whatever of Rolls-Royce motorcars. He was out here, they were showing off their new Dawn. I had a look, copped an eyeful of their Dawn.
Yeah.
It's all right.
Isn't it a place in Game of Thrones, Dawn?
Probably.
Yes, it's another one of the islands, I'm sure. Listeners.
Somebody will text in and tell us.
Yep. 0427 Joy 949.
Or just to say hi and to say that you're listening and loving the show.
And also text in if you would ever consider purchasing a car online without, you know.
Now, Subaru BRZ?
Yeah.
But now, well, yeah. Exactly.
Well, yeah,
good point.
Yeah, but... Yeah. Sorry, go on.
Oh, well, no. So the guy from Rolls-Royce was quite interesting because I think a brand like that, you're paying, you know, upwards of $600,000 for a car. He said it will never happen with them. He said that's initially where people get interested in Rolls. They'll look at something online, but he said you will always have that experience. And he used exactly those words. It was like you've got to smell and feel and touch it. And the thing is with a brand like that, if you don't have a deal in there, they'll come to you.
Nice.
You know what I mean? So for something like that, it's very different.
I also think that there's probably people out there thinking, well, hang on, the internet's been around for at least 20 years now. Surely why hasn't someone done this a bit sooner? But there's been little kind of, you know, flashes of this sort of thing happening since probably the early 2000s, and it hasn't ever really taken off. I think you wouldn't buy a house online. I think the second biggest purchase you make, you know, after that facelift that we're all going to get in next year and that Botox, you know, seriously, it would probably require the human touch.
And look, pulling on my you know, blue singlet for a minute, think of the jobs, people.
Well,
Come on.
He's literally wearing a blue singlet.
Yeah, and nothing else, yes.
No, but that's also a very good point.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's, you know, it is kind of heading in that direction. Tesla, I mean, I can kind of get a company like Tesla doing it because it's such a...
Disruptor?
You hate that word so much.
Okay.
No.
Annoyer?
I know that's what it is, but I watched the unveiling of the reveal of the Model X live, the stream of that, and I just wanted to punch him in the face.
That wasn't the Model X. It was something else. Yeah. You were watching the and that wasn't a reveal. That was just an unbutton, really.
It was very different. Anyway, but the evangelical craziness of this car company from that Elon Musk is so similar to Apple, and I find it a bit.
Yep. But you know, Henry Ford went through the same adoration phase.
Ford loved the internet.
He did. He was ahead of his time.
He was on top of it.
Apparently, he was until he started spouting very racially dodgy things. And but people used to love him in the same way. So nothing's new under the sun there, I think. But
yeah, it's interesting. But yeah, let us know. Is that something you would consider, buying a car online, like you'd buy that fabulous new Country Road shirt or whatever brand you choose? 0427JOY949 or email onair@joy.org.au. We would very much love to hear your thoughts. Very soon, we are going to be speaking to the lovely James Cockington about his fabulous book, so make sure you stick around. The show is Fender Bender. I'm here with Byron and Matt. We are talking cars, and we are very lucky to have on the phone an author of the wonderful book, Turning Japanese, 50 Years of Japanese Motoring in Oz. James Cockington is on the line. James, are you there?
Yes, I am. How are you going?
We're very well. How are you?
Fantastic.
Fabulous, fabulous, fabulous. Now you've this book is out now. It's very exciting. It's a pretty interesting kind of topic you've got here. What got you to this point? Why did you decide to write a book about Japanese motoring in Australia?
Well, about 5 years ago, I noticed that quite a few very young men, usually on P plates, were driving around in these slightly modified Toyota Cressidas and exciting stuff like that. And I have to admit, I thought they were pretty cool, these cars. They usually have white wall tyres. They have to have a Venetian in the back, in the rear window. Slightly lowered, but very tastefully done. And there were, you know, exotic cars like 1967 Toyota Corollas driving around. So I thought, you know, this is obviously a bit of a fad. And then I realised that it was quite a big thing, this buying an old Japanese car, restoring it, maybe modifying it a little. And I suddenly realised these were pretty cool cars.
James, you're speaking to Byron here as well.
Hello.
Hi. That's really interesting. You obviously would have kind of witnessed quite a lot of the growth and the acceptance of Japanese cars over the last few decades, really, since the 70s and 80s, as I have.
Yeah.
And do you think that maybe they've come to the point where people now look at these cars with exactly the same sort of affection that they would with maybe, you know, Holden FJs of the, you know, of a generation before and, you know, and that sort of thing? Or
yeah, that's exactly right. And, I mean, I'm in my 60s now, but I can remember growing up and Japanese cars were definitely exotic to me. My dad, who was in World War II, might have thought differently.
Yep.
And but I found them really exciting, things like the first Honda sports car that came here, the S600.
Yeah, of course. I mean, that was an amazing feat, wasn't it, that they managed to turn Australians, you know, who a generation that that had, you know, experienced World War II, just 20 years later, the way they managed to slowly but surely, but in a systematic way, you know, turn that kind of doubt around and for Australians to embrace the Japanese cars, hey?
Yeah, when I was growing up, the only Japanese things that you could buy seemed to be transistor radios. And then suddenly these cars came in and by the mid-60s, they were actually assembling them in Port Melbourne, I think.
That's right, by AMI, yes.
Yeah, yeah. And at first we tended to dismiss them, but gradually, like when they started racing at Mount Panorama, you suddenly realised, hey, these cars are pretty good. And by the time, the one that did it for me was the Datsun 240Z. I just saw that and
oh, the classic 24-ounce. Was that, what was your first Japanese car, the James?
I had a Datsun 1200.
Oh, classic.
Which I think I swapped for a Volkswagen or something. But the first kind of serious one I actually bought was a Mazda RX2, the Capella.
Yep, yep. An absolute collectible nowadays as well.
Yeah.
You wish you hung on to that one.
And you see quite a few of those around. The Mazda R100, the first rotary they introduced here.
Yep.
But, quite a few of them are classics now.
Yep.
You might know more about which ones to buy than me.
Well, there's the fact is that the Japanese cars have now become so entrenched in Australian motoring. I mean, the biggest selling privately brought brand, as you know, is Mazda, and Toyota's right up there as well. And Nissan and Mitsubishi have just been constants. Do you think that? Do you think that this will continue, or do you think that maybe with the rise of the Chinese brands and the Koreans are very established now in this market as well, that Japan's former glory may never be repeated?
Oh, I think the other Asian brands will take over gradually, but also we have the Germans, the Swedish, and I think it's more a case of people here have virtually bought every Holden Monaro that ever was, including some that have been tricked up out of parts, and they're out of the range of a lot of people. So my feeling is that the next generation of car freaks will move over to Japanese and then probably over to other stuff like early Volvos will probably have a bit of cachet.
James, can you identify maybe for us, do you have any hints and tips as to what people should look out for in terms of what might be a future classic?
I'm not really an expert on what will become classics, but obviously the Mitsubishis of the 80s, and people are already buying them. Even the Magnas, I've noticed a few of them have been...
I absolutely agree with you. Magna Rally Arts and the Magna All-Wheel Drive. These cars, I think that they are absolutely at the depth of their values, and people, particularly as Australian manufacturing, car manufacturing, whole car manufacturing winds down from next year, those cars, I think, will shoot through the roof. So that's you're spot on there, I think, James.
Yeah. And especially the early Mitsubishi Turbos, I can see those just going through the roof in terms of value.
In terms of the book, James, as well, do you touch on any much of the motorsport history in Australia with the Japanese cars? Obviously, the Nissan GTRs, the Godzillas of the 80s and 90s were quite a controversial period. Do you touch on that in the book?
Yeah, I do. I have access to the archives of a magazine called Racing Car News, which was very big when I was growing up, and that's where I got most of the photos, but also the original track tests. So what interested me was they were doing a track test of, say, the early Datsun 1600, and they did it on a racetrack, Surfers, I think it was, and they seemed to be really surprised about how good these cars were. This was 68 or something.
Yeah, that was very much the beginning, I think, of Japanese cars becoming very respectable in Australia with the independent suspension and the overhead cam engine. And, I mean, nowadays, Datsun 1600s in original condition are worth as much as maybe Kingswoods and Falcons and Valiants from that period as well. So, your insight is extremely pertinent and spot on.
Yeah, and this will just take off, I guess, until they actually run out of cars to restore.
Yeah, absolutely.
Will probably happen within 3-4 years.
Yep.
But I also like their really odd cars, like one of my favourites is the Honda Z, the Zot, which was, I can remember, I'm probably too tall to fit in one these days, but I can remember being passenger in these little rocket ships.
Yeah.
And,
little sub civic cars from the early 70s or very late 60s.
Well, James, I think that's about all we've got time for today, but the book is out now, I believe. Is that right?
Yeah, should be available anywhere, basically.
Fabulous. Yeah, anyone who's got even a vague interest in Japanese automotive, particularly its relationship to Australia, get out and check out Turning Japanese, 50 Years of Japanese Motoring in Oz. James Cockington, thank you so much for your time today. Much appreciated.
It's a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you. It was very interesting. Thank you.
Bye. This is Fender Bender on Joy 94.9. We've got lots more coming up. Stick around.
Joy 94.9.
Hi, this is Kylie Minogue, and you're listening to Joy 94.9.
Damn straight, Kylie. Thank you, Kylie. We'll see you next week, Kylie. My God, she's so busy, but she manages to just, like, hang out with us for, like, 5 seconds a week.
Yeah. And one coffee, please.
Got to admire her dedication.
I know, right? She's very gifted. Yeah. Now, Maddie Bowie.
Yeah.
Every time I say that now, I feel like I'm saying Savvy Bowie in my head, so I'm going to stop saying it like that. You were in La La Land recently, I believe.
Yeah, yes. And not only was it a surprisingly good little show, actually.
Yeah. Was it?
Yeah, there was so much more going on than I thought there was going to be. Everyone sort of tries to dull down the LA show and says, you know, it's a bit boring, it's a bit of a small show, nothing ever happens. It was actually really good.
Mm. Yeah, looked busy.
Well, there was 50 reveals. Like,
right.
On.
What, 50?
50.
And that was just Matt in the toilet. Sorry.
But of course, I went over there to drive the new Mazda CX-9, which was just a little bit exciting. And it's also a bit of a milestone car for Mazda because it represents a step away from their partnership with Ford, or the final step away, really.
Mm.
Passenger cars, we should say, obviously. There's, of course, the BT50 and the Ranger. But, yeah, it was off the old Ford Edge platform and also had a Ford 3.7 V6 previously. And
now
it's all Mazda, and it's the final Kodo passenger car,
yep,
which is their design language, of course.
That's right.
And it's also the final Skyactiv engine, to the seventh car to get the Skyactiv engine. Mm. So that was really interesting because it's a turbocharged version of the 2.5 litre that you might find in the SP25 and the CX5 and that sort of thing.
It's in the 6, is it in the 6 as
well?
Yeah,
but it's a very interesting take on a turbo petrol engine in that it feels a lot like a turbo diesel engine, which might sound really strange, but they've done that very much on purpose because, and this sounds a little bit creepy, they followed a lot of mums around driving SUVs to see, yeah, I know, right? How creepy is this?
Upsetting.
They are fair dinkum about this. Followed a lot of mums around driving to see how they use the car and, what sort of range it's driven in. And they found that a lot of people don't get over 3,000 RPM. So they figured, well, why don't we just tune the engine to develop all of its power around, the area that most people are going to use the car.
Mm. And Aussies will love that, won't they?
Well,
we all talk.
Of course, we all need bigger and bigger and bigger everything. Fair dinkum, it is a great car to drive, and it does feel rather turbo diesel-esque when you're just putting around, but if you give it a bit, it actually sings. It's actually quite roughy, and it gets along just fine, and it actually handles really well for a big car.
Because it's still a big car, right?
It's a big car. Yeah. It's if you imagine a Hyundai Santa Fe or a Toyota Kluger, something of that size, you're in the right ballpark.
But it weighs a lot less, doesn't it?
It weighs around 100 kilos less. So it's not a huge drop, but it's in keeping with Skyactiv body and Skyactiv transmission and Skyactiv everything else. This Gram strategy they speak of, they've shaved weight out of everywhere that they possibly can. So it actually feels, surprising. I found myself sounding silly saying this, but quite well balanced and quite dynamic when you get out and start flicking it around. You have to sort of remind yourself that, hey, I'm in a big 7-seater here.
Yeah.
This is quite an incredible feat.
Well, that's really strange because I felt that way 9 years ago when I first drove the CX-7, which I thought was a better name for a seven-seater from Mesa than 6-9, yeah. Just quietly.
You can't fit 9 people in there, Master.
Yeah.
They can't do maths, obviously, yeah. Master.
But, so it sounds like that they've probably rediscovered that kind of CX-7 formula, because the CX-7 is bigger than was bigger than the CX-5.
That's right,
That replaced it. So it looks like that they really have that Mazda mojo now extends right up the range.
Absolutely terrific because, you know, look, you don't want to get in something and it just to be boring and you hate driving it and, you know, you want to leave it at home on the weekends. This is the sort of car that I think, you know, Dad's going to pinch it and throw the golf clubs in the back and nick off on a Saturday morning and actually really have a bit of fun with it.
Did you drive it at any point with anyone, like many other people or stuff in it?
This was the issue. We only drove it with 3 people on board. So perhaps once you do load it up with, you know, 7 people in their shackles and get out on the highway, maybe you are going to feel it. Right. But, you know, once you dump the kids off at school and you're heading out to your Pilates class.
There we go. That's what she's up to.
Yeah, she can have some fun.
Yeah.
She can have
some
fun. Now, does it tow? Well, it's still tow.
It does still tow. They haven't upped the tow rating from the previous model.
Yeah.
And it's only 2 tonnes. So, look, you know, if you're going to tow, you're probably going to want to look at something a little bit bigger, and that's something where they may fall down against some of their rivals. But look, how many of them do you see hooked up to a trailer these days?
My drag queen friend Camilla Toe can possibly she'd be interested in that. I'm going to recommend it. Yes,
really,
yes.
Wowzers. But it's interesting they've got, you know, that's really kind of finalised their SUV lineup. Well, not necessarily finalised.
Well, not necessarily. We did have a little bit of a chat about that too. And interestingly, we're speaking about the Koru concept, of course, which is looking like becoming a CX-6, perhaps, and not a replacement to the CX-7. So sitting just a little bit above the CX-5.
Right,
and
that's interesting.
The interesting part of that was that they said it's not so much that they don't want to do it, it's a production capacity issue. And they are just so hard up against it now, trying to keep CX-3s coming CX-3, CX-5, CX-9 now coming out the door, that adding one more into the mix means we may have to build a new factory.
Wow. Jeepers. And, you know, for us who've been reporting on the car world for a number of years now, Mazda was right up against the wall in 2010, 2011, like before the CX-5 came in with the new Skyactiv stuff, to basically save their bacon. And now for them to be in this great situation where they can't make enough of their cars.
It's fantastic.
That is great.
Pretty and especially when you look at a lot of the other Japanese manufacturers that really, really struggled after GFC and they're still struggling to come back. It's really nice to see Mazda just doing so well. So,
and building cars that are really enjoyable to drive, which as some of those other competitors haven't really managed to get back on the feet to do. They might be building solid cars. We won't name names, but we can probably think of a few. But they're just not as exciting
and I think
as Mazda.
Yeah, and I think it's a styling issue too. Like, you don't want to be seen in something that looks like yesterday's news. You don't want to, you know, be in just some tarted up version of the last generation car. You want something that's all new and a bit snazzy when you're, you know, paying that kind of money.
Exactly. Go Mazda. And of course, the MX-5 has been a runaway hit, which brings me, ladies and gentlemen, to my next point. We are talking about the raddest car of the year.
I thought you were going to go, you were talking about running away there.
No. Oh, well, I might. Yes. I might.
In an MX-5 with Dan.
Oh, God. Yeah, look, it is raddest car time of the year. We are not going to announce it this week. It will be next week. We are taking a small hiatus, dear listeners, I'm not sure, but we are taking hiatus. And so next week's our last show for a while, and we're going to announce the raddest car of the year awards. And there's a few categories, ladies and gentlemen. I'm going to go through them right now as soon as I find them on my little bit of paper.
Well, while you look for them.
I found them. No, that's right.
But, okay, go ahead.
Okay, all right. So, categories include overall raddest car. Mm-hmm. We have the Plain Jane / WTF award. So, that's for your car that's either really dull and why is it there or so ugly you just want to slap it in the face a little bit. We also have the sexiest car, which is always a fun one. Most improved. I already know what I'm going to vote for that.
Oh, there's quite a few.
Yeah, right. Yes, yes. And best bargain. Mm-hmm. We used to do underrated, but there's just too many and we don't have time. So there's quite a few there. Now, guys, it's been an interesting year automotively. Lots of different trends and that kind of thing happening. And I suspect the Mazda MX-5 is going to be a big one next week. But, you know, I don't know. We haven't decided that yet. But we've just seen, I think, next week people will be able to start talking about the 2-litre version, Matty Bird.
Yeah, well, we can sort of talk about, you know, power outputs and price and that sort of thing. But we unfortunately, under embargo and can't talk about how it drives until Tuesday. But look, 20% more power is nothing to sneeze at.
Yeah.
And it's not that much more expensive. It's like optioning an automatic transmission to get a whole bigger engine. So $2,500 more to get a 2-litre across the board. Yeah, it's a pretty good deal.
Yeah, exactly.
But, so, I mean, the questions remain. Does it affect the balance? Does it, you know, all these things you can't talk about. But so that's why you should, if you should, you must listen next week to find what the deal is.
It is a really interesting situation, actually. And there's a lot more to it than simply plonking more power into the car. Yeah. So, yes, do tune in.
Yep. Do you boys have a couple of cars, anything that's really struck you this year that's really kind of changed things up or something that you've just fallen completely head over heels in love with?
Well, look, it sounds like I'm being paid by bloody Mazda. I fell in love with the little 1.5 base model Roadster MX-5.
Okay.
Like, back to a cloth roof, back to a lightweight little fun car that's actually fun to get in and just, you know, just rev it. Rev it and drive it really hard. It's really what that car should be about.
Mm.
And I'm so glad that somebody has finally returned to that recipe because, it's been missing for a while.
Yeah. Well, I've got to say that I completely agree with you, Matty. That is spot on. However, I kind of expected Mazda to come up with something. And let's face it, all MX-5s have been pretty special. There's never really been a dud MX-5, except maybe the folding hardtop one, but in automatic form. Although, but even that is still a great car, and good on you, Mazda, for sticking with this formula.
Yeah.
However, the big surprise for me this year, and this, are you guys sitting down? Are girls sitting down? Are people sitting down?
Oh, God, I think
brace
I know what
yourself.
You're going
to
say.
Brace
Wait
yourself.
For it. Wait
Do you
for
really?
It. No, I don't.
No. Because I wasn't in love with the styling when I first saw it unveiled in September last year, in 2014. But when I got behind the wheel of the Jaguar XE, it blew my mind. At last.
The socks were blown off.
Like they were those stockings. They just kept ripping. Can I say that the Jaguar XE drives the way that people who used to drive and buy BMW 3 Series in the 80s and 90s, that pure sports sedan, that kind of absolute driving pleasure, it just taps into that.
You wouldn't say ultimate driving machine.
Oh, no. I'd be sued by Bavarian Motorworks. But it's for me, that's been the surprise of the year.
Interesting. Jaguar any XE. Particular variant, like the S, the one with the sexy V6 engine,
No? Look, I think that's a really good one, but it's not the best for me. Either the 2-litre or 2.5T.
Ah.
But then the diesel is awesome as well.
The diesel's
the best. Folks, the best diesel. This is a new generation diesel, never before seen anywhere. Until this Jaguar XE came out.
Ingenium.
That's
right.
Sexy. It
sounds like a Bond villain.
It is. They've got so these car makers call their engine silly names. This one is the Ingenium.
That's right. And let me tell you, if you are in the market for a sports sedan with a diesel engine, you've got to check out the XE. But even if you wanted a turbo petrol, it's a sweetheart.
Yeah. You are.
Oh shucks.
And on that note, ladies and gentlemen, we do have to come to the end of the show. So Byron M, Matty B, thank you both so much for coming in.
Very welcome.
Oh, thank you for having me.
It's been a hoot. And we will hopefully see you very soon, of course. Dear listener, do stick around, though. Of course, we've got the fabulous Hannah is up next with Cute. She's extremely cute and wonderful and amazing and very gifted. We will be back next week. Again, it is for our very, very, very last show for a while. So please stick around and you will be hearing the winners and losers of the Fender Bender Raddest Car of the Year Awards. That's about it. My name is Tim Nicholson, signing off for another week. Safe driving.
This has been a Fender Bender podcast for Joy 94.9, Australia's first and only gay and lesbian radio station. See joy.org.au for more details.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.